Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie?
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kinda wanna know how it ends.
Okay, tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Chalk Talk is your weekly home for football news on Penguin Radio.
Black 88! Black 88!
We will take an in-depth look at some of the biggest news and notes from around the football world so you can stay up to date on some of the biggest stories and headlines. It doesn't matter if they are lining up on Sundays at Lambeau.
It's free play. Rodgers has made a living of this. Takes a shot downfield. And James Jones and Rodgers have done it again.
Or if they're on campus inside of the Big House.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Chalk Talk has it's all. And now, radio.dominican.edu and Penguin Radio presents Chalk Talk. Let's head into the studio and join your host, Jeff Sefford.
Off and running again on another edition of Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Jeff Sefford. Very happy to be with you. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. I know everybody's getting ready for Turkey Day. I know our family is. Got the turkey ready. Got a big 20-pounder, I think, this year. I'm looking forward to it already. And we had a great week of football this past weekend. Really, both sides. Excitement in the Big 12. We saw an upset in the Big 10. And definitely will be some shifting around in the playoff rankings for college football. And some coaching news as well in college football in the NFL. More Johnny Football news. Oh, boy, Johnny Manziel. What did he do now? We'll get to that, and we'll talk about some of the matchups going on Turkey Day, on Thanksgiving. We'll preview some of those, and we'll talk about the debacle in the officiating from last night in the Monday Night Football game. The Patriots did improve to 10-0 last night, defeating the Bills 20-13, but there were some definitely interesting plays that happened in that one. So that's going to be our show. We're kind of going to be all over the place today. A lot of stuff to talk about. Let's start with some off-the-field news. And let's go talk about Johnny Manziel. Johnny Football, after last week, we talked about him being named the starter going forward for the Cleveland Browns. Now he has been demoted back to the third-string quarterback, Josh McCown. Will be making the start this Monday night against the Baltimore Ravens. And Josh McCown will be making the start and will be the starter probably for the rest of the season because of a video that surfaced this past about a day or so ago of Johnny Manziel at a club in Texas. I believe it was Austin, Texas, where this video was seemingly taken. And you know, and it's not so much that he was doing belligerent acts in the video. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't pulling a Greg Hardy or a Ray Rice. You know, it was nothing like that. It was just more the history of what Johnny Manziel has done in his career thus far. He's had nothing but issues off the field, and this goes back to his time at Texas A&M as well. And we remember Johnny Football was suspended for a time at Texas A&M. He had to sit out the first half for a game partially because of a problem he had with off-the-field issues. I mean, we've all seen the pictures of him in College Station. My favorite is, I guess I shouldn't be laughing at this point, but he's in this ridiculous, I think it's like a Yogi Bear costume type of thing. He just looks ridiculous, and you know, and it's been well documented his trouble with alcoholism, and he went to rehab, and the Cleveland Browns were very supportive with Johnny Manziel, and for good reason. I mean, they used a first-round draft pick on him. They're seemingly trying to protect their investment there, but with Manziel having so many problems, what are the Browns going to do? You can't just keep letting them screw up and do this to the team. It's not professional. It doesn't look well, you know, from the other teams in the league, and it doesn't look well in the locker room either. You know, all these other players are seeing this too, and they're seeing Johnny Football just go around and seemingly make a fool out of himself. And are you ever going to win a Super Bowl with a quarterback like that? No, absolutely not. And if you're Johnny Manziel, what are you thinking? You know, like, you gotta know that this is the 21st century, and this is the age of social media. Nothing is kept secret anymore, it seems like. I mean, there's cameras everywhere, you know, you can't hide. And especially if you're a star athlete, a Heisman Trophy winner like Johnny Manziel, cameras are going to be on you 24/7. And what, you think you're not, you're going to get unnoticed walking into a club with hundreds of people? Like, are you kidding me? Like, what are you doing, man? Oh boy, it's like somebody that wants trying to get a job and they know they have to pass a drug test, but they keep smoking dope, you know, like, that's just not going to work. You know, it's just kind of makes you scratch your head. I mean, definition of insanity there a little bit, but more traumas for the Browns. And, you know, this is Johnny Manziel's fight, but you can't just look at the Browns and feel super sorry for them either, because, you know, they're the ones that took the risk. They were the ones that drafted the guy, and there was a lot of people that passed on Johnny Manziel and didn't think that Johnny Manziel was an NFL talent. And, you know, you look at where Johnny Manziel is in his career, and I don't know how much better it would be even if he wasn't going around drinking and stuff. I mean, obviously that's all speculation, but a lot of the problems Johnny Manziel's had is, frankly, because he's just been inconsistent on the field. And, you know, some of that could be tied to him drinking and all that other stuff. But, it can't be all that. And, you know, he's still have physical issues, you know, and decision-making problems. And there's a lot of problems with his game also. So it's not all, you know, so you can't just look at the Browns and say, oh, they're just getting screwed here, because they put themselves into this position, and they have done this time and time again with these choices of players that they draft. And, you know, it's Brandon Whedon, and you just look at the number of first-round selections this team has had, and there just aren't a lot of these high picks that are making impact on the team. And when you're a team that's struggling, when you're a franchise that's struggling like the Cleveland Browns, you have to be proactive, and you have to be, you know, finding players that will fit your system. And you look at teams that are completely built off draft picks, a la the Green Bay Packers. Look what they have done. Look what the Pittsburgh Steelers have done. Look what the Patriots have done. You know, sure, they get free agent acquisitions here and there. You look what Packers did with Reggie White, what they've done with Julius Peppers, and you look at, you know, the Steelers have added a couple pieces here and there, but they don't try to build the whole team in free agency like what the Browns tried to do when they got Dante Whitner last year, and when they got Paul Kruger, and they added Tremont Williams this past season. And that blueprint of just adding veterans and plugging them in just isn't going to work. You got to have some young talent around the team that so that these veteran players can come in and they can fill the role that they're supposed to, but they shouldn't be the absolute focal point of the team. So a lot of problems with the Browns, a lot of problems with Johnny Manziel. Their season is seemingly going in nowhere fast, and I feel sorry for them having to go play on Monday Night Football against the entire country next week. That might be a little interesting, but I mean, maybe the good news is that they're playing the Ravens, and the Ravens have a bunch of their own problems as well. Justin Forsett broke his arm. He's out. Joe Flacco, he blew out his ACL, so he's done for the year. So it's just been a – there's another team it's just been a horrible, horrible year for, and it'll be, man, toilet bowl next Monday night. You in? Who knows? But moving on to last Monday night's – staying with the Monday night theme, look at the New England Patriots. They improved to 10-0. The offense was not as dominant as we have seen it in weeks past. It was definitely a challenge put up by the Bills defense and their front seven. Definitely give the Bills credit for hanging with the Patriots and giving them all that they could handle. And there were many instances in this game where Tom Brady just did not look comfortable. He was having to get the ball out of his hand quickly because that pass rush was getting right in his face. And I think, if anything, the Bills gave a little bit of a blueprint for how to beat the Patriots. The key is you got to get pressure with that front. And what made the Bills dangerous in getting pressure was they were getting pressure with 3 and 4 instead of having to blitz. And of course, when you blitz a guy like Tom Brady, you would think he's going to be able to see it, or dangerously enough, if he sees it before the snap, he can come up with some crazy audible to change up the plays and the signals so he can get something that he likes. And we saw him do that a time or two last night. I remember one player they brought a blitz from the safety, and Tom Brady threw the ball to Amendola exactly where that blitz came from, and that's just the type of player he is. But if you can get pressure with 4, or sometimes even 3, then that forces, you know, that there's not really too much Tom Brady can do about that. It's, you know, he can't make a read for that. If his offensive line is just getting beat up at the point of attack, there's not much he can do. So that's got to be the key, is how do you get pressure with 4 guys on Tom Brady? And that'll be a huge key for any AFC team that is thinking about maybe knocking them off in the playoffs or trying to knock them off in the regular season, is the Patriots are well on their way to another undefeated season. Obviously a long way to go, and the Carolina Panthers are right along with them at 10-0 as well. But the bigger story from this game was the officiating. There were a couple of plays where it was very odd, and watching the officiating blunders, one was just like, wow, I've never seen it happen in a football game before. I'm sure a lot of you have already heard about this and have heard a lot about it, but Danny Amendola making a catch, and there was an, quote, inadvertent whistle that was blown on a play, and it looked as though Danny Amendola was ready to run into the end zone. It seemed like he had gotten past a bunch of defenders, but the play was ruled dead at that spot because the officials said that by rule, if there is an inadvertent whistle, that the play is returned to where the player gained possession of the football. And when you look at that and you think, okay, that's not all that odd, but they messed that part of it up as well, because the rule actually says that you need to be in possession of the ball for him to make that rule. And the whistle came before the ball got to Amendola. So it should have been like a redo. They should have gone back to the original spot of the play and redid the whole play all over. You know, and granted, you look at it, the Patriots, they got definitely the rough end of the deal. And maybe the officials made that ruling just to ease the pain a little bit there and for the Patriots. But man, I mean, that was just such a huge blunder and really cost the Patriots. I don't know if I've heard a fan base boo as loud as I've heard any fan base boo. And of course, leave it up to the wonderful citizens of Massachusetts to complain very loudly. They do have a very... they are right up there with, I'd say, Philadelphia fans for being very boisterous and just, you know, passionate about their teams. And it was just such an odd situation. And then later in the game, on the last play of the game for the Bills, the Tyrod Taylor completed about a 16-yard pass to Sammy Watkins on the left-hand sideline at about midfield. And it looked as though that he rolled out of bounds. But the officials ruled that he had, quote, given himself up on the play, in the field of play. So, hence, time ran out on the Bills when they really should have had one last Hail Mary heave at the end zone on the last play of the game. So that was another blunder by the officiating, and man, what a mess it was. Even Mike Tirico, who's, you know, he's the play-by-play man for Monday Night Football with John Gruden, and they've been together for a number of years. And you look at a guy like Mike Tirico, he understands that he's speaking to a national audience, and you know, there's a lot of different people watching with a lot of different opinions from a lot of different age groups. So he's not going to put himself way out on a limb in that type of a situation. But he was very vocal in his disgust with the officials, saying that it was a mess. And he's seen a lot of messes before. I mean, he was right there for that Fail Mary play, the Seattle and Green Bay a number of years ago with the replacement refs. And this type of fiasco reminded me of something that would happen with the replacement refs. And that's concerning to me. These are supposedly the best officials the NFL has. And as fans and media, players, everybody, shouldn't tolerate. It should not be tolerated. Not for the NFL, not for a multi-billion-dollar industry with this football league and what it represents. It just shouldn't happen. I mean, obviously mistakes are going to happen sometimes. Yes, I understand that. But huge blunders like this is a whole other thing altogether. And this can cost team seasons, you know, playoff wins, or heck, God forbid, even a Super Bowl. And that's what I'm most concerned about when I look at this issue is, you know, I just don't want to see another Tuck Rule game. And I understand that part of the Tuck Rule, that example was that there was a badly worded rule in the rule book. But, you know, everybody would agree that that play was a fumble and the Raiders should have won that football game. That's the main thing, is I just don't want to see another big blunder like that happen on a really big stage, because that'll be bad for the game, it'll be bad for the league, and it'll be bad for the viewer as well. It'll almost be like a buzzkill. You know, who wants to see that? You know, I'm sure even a fan of a team that it would benefit would kind of think, well, yeah, we won, but this, you know, it would always have that black cloud hanging over that one moment in that history. So that's that, and we got a big day lined up of Turkey Day football. This one other thing to kind of think about with this officiating thing, though, is, you know, is what I was thinking about was, you know, should NFL referees be, should the NFL have full-time officials? Because it's been well documented that officials aren't full-time employees of the NFL. They're part-time, and most of them have full-time jobs, and a lot of them are very successful. A lot of the officials are attorneys and doctors, and you know, they're all these different things. And that was kind of an epiphany for me a couple of years ago. I had no idea that was the case. And it was kind of, I heard about that when the replacement refs were in place. But you know, maybe that's something the NFL should look at. You know, maybe not all their in-game refs have to be full-time, but maybe they should have a number of officials that are full-time. You know, maybe have one full-time official at every football game, that's their job to be an NFL official. So if anything hits the fan, you've got an official there that's trained on everything NFL rulebook to the absolute T. And I understand these guys are very good at what they do that they have now, and obviously they are extremely good if they come out on every Sunday and do awesome work for the league. But it's just, you know, it might be, you know, it's unavoidable to think that you could have somebody do a better job, even better job, and more of a, I guess the word is thorough job. It fits their full-time job. It's a similar thing here, college students. I mean, we got, you know, we got a lot of stuff on our plate, and, you know, we got it stretched out all over the place. And, you know, there's a lot of instances where you might be able to do better at your, you know, job as a pizza cook or as a delivery driver, whatever you're doing, if you weren't going to school. But since you're going to school, then it kind of gets in the way, right? It's the same type of a philosophy. So it'll be interesting to see what the NFL does and how this all shakes out. All right, now we're moving on. On to some Turkey Day football. Should be a fun day. Love the tradition of football on Thanksgiving, and I understand a lot of people work on Thanksgiving to bring all those action for us, the broadcasters, guys in the truck, camera crews, everybody involved. I mean, it's a really cool deal, so you got to thank them, and also thank, you know, it's just a great day for everybody, Turkey Day with your family, enjoy some really good food, have some laughs, it's an awesome time, and throw in some football. The Eagles up against the wall. They've lost two straight. Still in the race in the AFC East. The AFC Least is what I think they should be calling it. Is definitely one of the worst divisions in football. But have a chance to kind of get off the schneid. Sam Bradford might be coming back this week. His status is up in the air. You know, not really sure where he's going to be headed after this week. Or where he's going to be headed. Mark Sanchez would start in his place if Bradford can't go, and the Lions, they started off their season terribly, but have won their last two games against two pretty good opponents. They won 2 weeks ago in Green Bay and beat the Oakland Raiders this week at home, and the Lions know all about being spoilers on Thanksgiving, that's for sure. It seems like they're in that role every season, and, you know, they've had, last couple years have had some more success, but this year they're kind of back to the same old Lions, so this will be an interesting game to watch. Definitely a lot on the line for the Eagles. I would say this is a very much so must win, because you got a fan base that's fed up, you got maybe some players starting to get disgruntled, and, you know, you're playing on national TV. This is the statement you got to make and say, hey, you know, we're not just a pushover team, we're going to try to make a run here to get into the playoffs. And for that reason, I expect Philadelphia to come out with a victory on Thursday against the Lions. Second game of action. This is a very interesting game. The Dallas Cowboys at home against the undefeated 10-0 Carolina Panthers. And one thing I find very interesting about this game, and really it doesn't have to do with any of the X's and O's on the field, but the line from Vegas, the betting line, has Dallas favored by a point at home. And I understand Dallas has Tony Romo back. Dallas picked up their first win in 7 weeks after having lost their last seven games. I guess it's not 7 weeks because they had the bye week in there, but their first win in since the seven-game losing streak. You get the point. Anyway, they got Tony Romo back, and that should make them go a little bit faster and make them a much better team. Tony Romo's a top 10, maybe even top 5 quarterback in this league. When you get a guy like that back on your roster, of course it's going to make your team improve. But still, I am shocked at that. To me, it's like a slap in the face to the Panthers. Like, are you kidding me? We're past the point where they should be considered a possible contender. This team is a contender, and right now they are the best team in the NFC, period. So I don't care who they're playing. They should be favored against anybody, anywhere in the NFC, and I don't expect them to be intimidated at all going into Jerry World on Thursday afternoon. I think they're going to go in there with a chip on their shoulder with something to prove. And, you know, maybe there are still some doubters out there about this team, and this will be a good game for them to go out and shut them up. And that's kind of what this team is. They're not the most talented team or the most athletic team. I mean, you look at their wide receivers, it's like, are you kidding me? They got Devin Funchess and Philly Brown and Ted Ginn Jr. You know, that's not going to knock your socks off. Greg Olsen is a fabulous tight end, and that's probably their best option. But this team is tough. They're mean. They'll hit you in the mouth. They got Cam Newton playing with swag. I don't know if there's any other way to put it. And, you know, you got Mike Tolbert back there. He's got some punch. Jonathan Stewart, he's no pushover. He's a big, athletic, physical back. And the defense is physical, tough front seven, good secondary. It's just a tough, rough, and mean football team. And I expect them to go into Dallas and kind of put the nail in the coffin for the Cowboys. And I think a loss on Thanksgiving Day to the Panthers would do just that. And I expect Carolina to go in there with some attitude and for them to just stomp the Cowboys. I'm getting my C's mixed up a little bit there, but should be a fun game to watch. I do think the Cowboys will hang around for a bit. I mean, playing on Thanksgiving, the Cowboys and the Lions, you know, they're kind of the, you know, the protectors. You know, they're the two teams that are always on Thanksgiving, so they kind of have a pride for playing on that Thanksgiving Day. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. And the last game on Thursday, this one should be really fun. It's at Lambeau Field, frozen tundra of Lambeau. It's the Green Bay Packers. They got back on track last week and really looked more like the Packers. They really dominated the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings didn't really have much of a chance. They hung around for a while, but the defense really had Teddy Bridgewater on his horse. I think he got sacked 5 or 6 times. Eddie Lacy had a nice game. He had 100 yards. Aaron Rodgers didn't have the best statistical game, but he had a couple of important throws when they needed it, and the Packers picked up a big win on the road. Now they come back to play against a Bear team who was a team I think everybody was expecting to be absolutely god-awful, and they haven't been. You know, they haven't been that bad. And, you know, to me, that speaks to John Fox and how good of a coach he is. And Jay Cutler's not playing too bad. And Matt Forte has been out for the last couple weeks. Jeremy Lankford's played well in his stead. And that Bear defense hasn't been absolutely awful. We've seen Zach Miller. You know, remember him? Played for the Raiders. Was the best, one of the better tight ends in the league with the Raiders for a number of years. He had career resurgence, had a couple big weeks the last couple weeks. Come in, they did lose on Sunday, but fought right with tooth and nail with the Denver Broncos on Sunday, and they were right there and playing in a rivalry game in Lambeau Field. Should be a fun environment. The big storyline is Brett Favre's return to Green Bay. He'll be getting his number retired as a Green Bay Packer and will be put in to the Ring of Fame at the Lambeau Field facility. He'll join the likes of Bart Starr, Reggie White, Ray Nitschke, all of these legendary Packer players from the 13-time world champion Green Bay Packers. Such a cool franchise, such a cool place, Lambeau Field. I've been there a couple times. If you're a football fan, I don't care who you root for, or, you know, if you hate the Packers, you know, you should go to Lambeau Field. It's one of those places. It's like a, if you're a football fan, it is like a cathedral for football. It's, you know, it's, the history is just so rich in the place, and it is such a special place. The fans are great, and I would just highly recommend it. It should be a fun environment. Every time the Packers and Bears get together, it's a lot of fun, and expect a good game on Sunday. I think that Green Bay has a pretty good chance to win. I mean, when they're, obviously you always have an extra added motivation when you got something like a jersey retirement to pump you up a little bit, and that's what the Packers have. And the Packers have played awesome at home with Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. And after kind of regaining their momentum or regaining their composure a little bit last week after that tough loss, or last couple weeks losing three straight before that week and kind of putting them back on track, I expect them to play well at home against the Chicago Bears and pull out a victory in that one. All right, so that's going to do it for our first segment. Listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about some NCAA football talk, go over some of the just-released NCAA football top 25 playoff rankings, talk about Les Miles, and talk about Rivalry Week this week and the implications it will have for the college football playoff. We'll be right back after this short break here on Penguin Radio. Stay with us.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Josh Groban. My favorite thing about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and helps get it to kids in need, but they can't do it alone. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We're here with you on a Tuesday afternoon, going up on a Tuesday, right before Thanksgiving, 2 days to the turkey. I'm sure a lot of you guys already got your birds brining away and got your, maybe you got your stuffing started already, or mashed taters, whatever's going on in your kitchen. I know that there's always a lot of different ways to do Thanksgiving, and it's not always all about turkey. There are some interesting traditions I've heard about. There's one person I was talking to recently that had one of their family members had something that they couldn't eat poultry. There was some type of condition they had, and so they have meatloaf every year for Thanksgiving. So it's not always about the turkey, and it's more about just being with your family and enjoying time with loved ones and just having fun. That's my favorite part about Thanksgiving, is just sitting around the dining room table and listening into what the what your crazy friend will say next, you know. But moving on now to some NCAA football talk. We're talking a lot about the NFL. Man, we went pretty long on that last segment, but a lot of stuff to talk about and lots of, you know, kind of overarching opinions and things to look at. And honestly, we could have spent an hour just looking at those things that we just went over. So, and if you want to listen to the last NFL segment, all of our shows, all of the DJ shows are podcasted on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu under student shows. You can also listen to all of our athletics in podcast form as well. We have Dominican softball, Dominican soccer, and Dominican basketball men and women's has just gotten underway. Yours truly is on the call for those matchups. So looking to the newly released college football playoff rankings, here we go. Drum roll. Number one, no surprise, Clemson Tigers coming out of Death Valley. They've been number one the last couple weeks and haven't done anything to lose that spot. They would have to lose at some point to lose that spot, and they will probably waltz through this week with a win. They're playing 3-8 South Carolina that just lost to the Citadel this past week, so I don't think it would be too big of a stretch to say that the Tigers should be just fine on Saturday to make it to the ACC title game. But the title game shouldn't be a walkover either, because they're going to probably face a North Carolina Tar Heel team that's 10-1 right now and playing some pretty good football. So it should be, that should be an interesting one to see. And number two, Alabama Crimson Tide. And no changes in the number one and number two spot. It's the last two spots is where we will see the change, and most partially because of how Ohio State played. They lost to Michigan State, and did I call that one or what? But the Tide, they come in at number two. Number three, Oklahoma Sooners find themselves in the playoff rankings for the first time this season. They had that tough loss a couple weeks ago in the Red River rivalry game against Texas, but they've really bounced back nicely. Had a couple nice wins. They, a little bit of a surprise to see them as high as they were just because of how they won against TCU. That was a very close game against TCU. TCU took them right to the end. They actually had a two-point conversion attempt to win the game, but ended up coming up short. They had an opportunity to kick the PAT to tie, but they just decided to go for the win instead. But didn't work out. So Oklahoma finds themselves in the number three spot. Number four, the surprising undefeated from the Big Ten, the Iowa Hawkeyes. Man, who would have thought at this point in the season that the one undefeated team in the Big Ten would be Iowa? Iowa? Not Ohio State. Not Michigan State. Not Wisconsin. Not Nebraska. The Iowa Hawkeyes, team with so little four and five star recruit talent, just kind of the cardiac bunch. And it's cool to see a team like this do this. And, you know, it shows that it's not all about the high profile recruits. It's about putting a team together that can win. And the Hawkeyes have done that. And congratulations to them. They will have a chance to run the table. They're already cemented their spot in the Big Ten title game. And we'll have a chance to play themselves into this playoff. If they win out, they're in. That's pretty much the key to the whole thing. Coming in at number five, the team that picked up that huge win in the horseshoe, the Michigan State Spartans. They did it without Connor Cook for a lot of that game. He was injured. His status for Saturday is a little bit up in the air. Injury is listed at this point as day-to-day, so we'll have to see what happens with that. But what a huge win for the Spartans, and it came in a way that, you know, a little bit unorthodox. This defense hasn't been great, but a lot of the issues with Ohio State I talked about kind of reared themselves into the picture. You know, the quarterback play was not great. Zeke Elliott, who had been a huge player, didn't have his best game and couldn't bail his team out like he had done so many times. He spoke out against the play calling and was just not a good night for the Buckeyes. So Michigan State goes up to number 5 and are sitting in a position where they're in pretty good shape. If they see any team really lose in that top 4, they would jump right into that conversation and could still have a chance for the Big Ten championship game as well. Coming in at number 6, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. The Irish had a tough time for a lot of the game against Boston College at Fenway Park. I loved those green uniforms, though. Those were pretty nasty. Have a very interesting game coming up this week against the Stanford Cardinal out on the farm. It should be a game that they should be favored in, I would imagine. But still, maybe an opportunity, if anything, for the Irish to show the committee what type of team they are and to show them that they should be a playoff team. So Notre Dame definitely not out of it yet. Number 7, the Baylor Bears. Baylor went into Stillwater, Oklahoma this past week, beat the, at the time, undefeated Oklahoma State Cowboys, and did it in pretty convincing fashion, kind of surprised a lot of people, surprised me. I had been very impressed at what Oklahoma State had done to that point, but the Bears were able to get the win and kind of get themselves back into the chase a little bit. They are on the outside looking in, obviously, at number 7, but still a chance there. Number 8, the Ohio State Buckeyes, after having that winning streak snapped and just not a good week for them, will have a really big game this week. Number 9, a little bit of a surprise here, the Stanford Cardinal, the only team from the Pac-12 on the list, coming in at number 9, had a game they looked fairly good in against the Cal Golden Bears this past week. And coming in at number 10, the Jim Harbaugh-led Michigan Wolverines, setting up a huge matchup in the Big House this week. Number 8 versus number 10, Ohio State versus Michigan in the game. Should be a, man, a lot of stuff on the line, conference championships on the line. Michigan, with the 2 losses, I would imagine they're pretty much out of it for the playoff chase, but definitely have a chance at the Rose Bowl, and what a huge step that would be for the Michigan program. They've been so down for the last couple years. For them to be able to have the opportunity to make it to the playoff, or to a game like the Rose Bowl, is a huge thing for them. And Ohio State, man, they face a challenge having to play at Michigan in a rivalry that at Michigan, they just have to be just jonesing for a win. They just want it so bad. Ohio State has been really dominating this rivalry in the last number of years, and Michigan football has been pretty down for the last number of years, but Harbaugh's put some fire back into the program, and this could be the exclamation point for Michigan, kind of showing up that, hey, hail to the victors, we're back, you know, and should be a fun week, and should be a fun week in college football in general. As we look one last time at the rankings, Clemson number 1, Alabama number 2, Oklahoma number 3, Iowa number 4, Michigan State number 5, Notre Dame number 6, Baylor number 7, number 8 Ohio State, number 9 Stanford, and number 10 Michigan. And looking ahead to this week, it is rivalry week around college football. Most teams playing in rivalry matchups this week. You know, we got Virginia, Virginia Tech, Georgia, Georgia Tech. You know, the Civil War, the game, the Iron Bowl, all these really awesome rivalries around college football. And it's a cool tradition to have all these big games. Bedlam is another really big one. And there's a lot of marbles on the table, that's for sure. A lot of games with playoff implications on the line, and a lot of teams playing to try to get that spot in the playoffs. And that's the main focus now as we head to the last week of the regular season. Next week is conference tournament week. Most teams will be playing in their conference championship games. There will be a few other games scattered around as well. We'll see the Pac-12, the ACC, the SEC title games, all three happening next weekend. And from there, tickets will be booked for the playoff games and all the other bowl games from around the college football world. So seems hard to believe that this college football season is kind of wrapping up, but we are not far from the end, and it should be just a fun year and fun ending to this already wild college football season. I'm almost kind of expecting some crazy ending, another Hail Mary or a blocked field goal or a muffed punt return for a touchdown and a lateral play on a kickoff to win the game. I mean, all the crazy plays that have happened this season, I'm almost expecting another one. We'll just have to wait and see. Moving on to our next topic of discussion, it'll be Les Miles and his status at LSU. This story came out yesterday that a source at LSU basically said that it is very likely that Les Miles' contract, which goes through 2019, will be bought out by the university, mostly by boosters. They're saying a $15 to $20 million buyout for Les Miles' contract at LSU. And it sounds like that the university just wants to go in another direction with the program. Les Miles has been there for a long time. He's had a lot of success. He's been to two national championships, one in 2007 with Matt Flynn at quarterback, Len Dorsey on their defensive line were a couple of the big stars on that team, and they got demolished in 2011 by Alabama in the national championship game, and that was kind of part of the start of Alabama's domination of LSU. That's got to be part of why Les Miles is moving out, and the Tigers have been limping in the last couple weeks. They've lost three games in a row, came in 7-0 on November 7th to play Alabama, lost three games after that. And for a program like LSU, it's just not good enough for them. They're looking to be playoff contenders, you know, conference contenders, national championship contenders, and 7-3 just isn't going to get it done. And I guess that's the reason why they're looking to move on. One name I've heard thrown around is Jimbo Fisher. I don't know if I buy that, just because of where he is at Florida State. I would think Jimbo would be feeling happy as a clam to be where he's at in Tallahassee. This is an interesting story just because of the success that Les Miles has had. You look at his winning percentage, and for his winning percentage at the school, and his percentage is better than even Nick Saban's percentage. And I talked about it. He's had so much success and has brought a lot of stability to the program. There's been a lot of talk about maybe part of the reason is the quote-unquote vanilla offense that Les Miles' team plays. It is a very kind of old-school offense. It doesn't have a whole bunch of razzle-dazzle, but Les Miles isn't just a guy stuck in the 20s either. He's had a lot of moments where he's called some crazy plays, a lot of plays on special teams. To me, I compare him a lot to a guy like Jeff Fisher as a coach. You know, he's tough. You know, he stresses defense. You know, defense is very important. He wants to run the football and play action pass and Once in a while, he'll throw in a little wrinkle that you won't be looking for. Something like a fake field goal, a fake punt, a flea flicker, you know, some type of gadget play to really burn you. And to me, Jeff Fisher is just like that in the NFL, and Les Miles has been doing it in Baton Rouge for a long time. And this definitely will not be the last we see of Les Miles. And one coaching vacancy that I see that might be very possible for a guy like Miles is USC. You see, look at where USC is with them not having a coach at this point. Yes, they do have a coach on an interim basis in there, but man, from their perspective, Les Miles would be the perfect type of a coach. He's got the experience. He's been at a big time football school, so he knows how to deal with the boosters, deal with the fans, deal with the egos of all these star football players. He knows how to recruit. He can go back to the same places he was recruiting with LSU because he'll know the people. He'll have a lot of good connections there. So I definitely could see Les Miles being a very good candidate for the USC coaching job, and I think he would be a great hire for the school. We would definitely be that, I think, neutralizing factor for them. They've been just too up in the air, you know, too much controversy. You know, they got coaches getting drunk. You got Heisman trophies getting taken away, national titles getting taken away. And that's the main issue at this point when you look at what's been going on with USC. It's not been the talent. They've been still able to bring in some of the most talented recruiting classes in the country year in and year out. It's just been a matter of putting it on the field. And as we saw this past week when they went up to Autzen Stadium, they're still far away from being an elite program. The Ducks just kind of kicked them around a little bit. Vernon Adams had a heck of a game. But, you know, maybe Les Miles is the guy for the Trojans. And you got to think that if the Trojans wanted Les Miles, that you have to believe that they'd probably be able to get him. And speaking of the Trojans, they have a big game this week playing against UCLA. Surprisingly enough, that's for the Pac-12 title. Or the Pac-12 South title. I'm sorry. missed that one. It's the North and the South. But that should be another interesting rivalry game to take a look at. A lot of cool rivalries mentioned: Ohio State, Michigan, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. And, you know, those games with big implications, especially Michigan and Ohio State and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Both of those games could have playoff implications for both sides. Obviously, when you look at Oklahoma, they're in the race, and you got Oklahoma State maybe trying to climb their way back into it after they were in the top 10 this past week, coming in undefeated, but got tripped up by Baylor. Maybe they could possibly sneak back in as a one-loss team in the Big 12. But, you know, Notre Dame, they have something to prove. They want to impress the voters in their game against Stanford on the road in Palo Alto. That should be a fun one to see. Just in terms of historical factor, the Civil War game, one of the longest running rivalries out in the state of Oregon, Oregon State versus the Ducks. Oregon State has had a terrible season, coming in at 2-9. But it's always fun to see rivalries, and you never know what can happen in a rivalry game. Just ask Dave Wanstead about going into Morgantown a number of years ago when they played number 2 West Virginia, and they were a huge underdog, and nobody gave them a chance in heck to win that one. So you never know with rivalry week. And the one game I'm really, really looking at as a chance for an upset is the Iron Bowl. It's at Jordan-Hare. The Tigers have not had a very good season. They are ranked in the top 10 coming into the first week of the season. They're 6-5 to this point. It's been a disappointing year. But Gus Malzahn and that team playing at home in front of their fans in a game that's, for them, like the as big as the national championship game, that seems like a interesting matchup. Seems like the type of a game where Alabama could trip up. And Auburn, they've given Alabama some fits over the last couple years. Cam Newton had that unbelievable comeback a number of years ago. Obviously, the kick six, kick return 2 years ago in the Iron Bowl to put Auburn into the SEC championship game and into later the national title game. But man, if you're Auburn, what else you got to play for? You got your six wins. You're bowl eligible. Yeah, you know, if you win, you might get a better bowl game. And if you lose, you might not get that same bowl. But what does that really matter for a program like Auburn? Not all that much. They're getting plenty of money from other places. So this game is all about pride. It's all about playing for War Eagle in front of 90,000-plus fans. And if there's any team that can beat Alabama between now and the playoff, between now and the SEC championship, I think Auburn has the best chance to do it. Once it gets into the SEC title game, especially with how the Gators have performed, the Florida Gators have already clinched their ticket to the SEC title, winning the SEC East. But the Gators haven't really looked very good. They've been able to squeak by a couple of mediocre at best opponents. I mean, Florida, would they play Florida Atlantic and barely won this past week in overtime? I mean, that's very concerning for the Gators. So, but Auburn, look for them to maybe pull off something and pull off a shocker. It wouldn't be the craziest thing we've ever seen. And we'll definitely be able to keep us watching, that's for sure. All right, well, we are out of time here on Chalk Talk. It's almost 5 o'clock, coming up in just a few minutes. Uncovered with DJ Soundwave will be coming through your airwaves from 5 to 6 o'clock. Want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving one more time. Hope everybody has a good day. And if you're not hanging out with family, if you have to work, at least you can have a nice meal. Enjoy yourself and just enjoy some time. If you are with family, enjoy some time with family and friends. And I know I'm heading home right after this, so safe travels for everybody as well. And thank you, everyone, for listening in this semester. It's been a lot of fun, and look forward to talking to you guys again soon on Dominican Penguin Basketball and again on Penguin Radio next semester. So one last time, this is Jeff Safford signing off for Chalk Talk, and DJ Soundwave is coming up next. Getting it free.